Thanks to Hawthorne for supporting FilmSack. Hawthorne is a premium, tailored, personal care brand that's making it easy for guys to feel and smell their best. Get special offers for the holidays going on right now by visiting hawthorne.co.
You don't know how lucky you are being a monkey. Because consciousness is a terrible curse.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 487. My name is Scott Johnson. Joining me today, Brian. We like to start all our FilmSacks with a humping marionette show, Dunaway.
Oh, we do. And speaking of which, here comes one now. Oh, hi.
Hi.
Sorry, I'm running late, guys. I was just down the street performing my one-man act of lewd behavior using wooden puppets as surrogates. Oof. I think I got a splinter. Hey, did I tell you guys I found a totally sus hole behind some filing cabinets in my day job as a filing clerk? First, I was like, I wonder if this is a portal to the consciousness of another human being where I can see what they see, feel what they feel. So I crawled in with reckless abandon, board in hand, because my life sucks. I told you about the sexy puppets thing, right? Anywho, as I'm crawling along, I'm suddenly transported to the other side of the wall where my boss is taking a dump. Long story short, I'm now a full-time sexy puppeteer street performer. Come check out my show. Oh, by the way, I wouldn't procreate with Bad Hair Day Diaz with John Malkovich's reproductive parts. Is it parts or parts? I mean, do you think of the male anatomy as a single unit or multiple parts to create a whole? Perhaps you don't think of the male anatomy at all. You're a loss. Randy?
Your new transition is cracking me up. I'm now getting used to it. Also with us, Randy, he also has a portal. Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Randy.
Oh, my God. Sorry about that. You caught me looking at my Wall Street Journal, not reading it, since reading it would require scanning each line from left to right and would take, you know, time. No, I'm just looking at this Wall Street Journal like a crazy person. I'm successful. I'm wealthy. Oh, and I have some toast here. See, I only eat about half of the toast that I make for myself. I bite it into these funny shapes, and then I just leave those shapes on the plate like a crazy person. It's actually a totally normal thing to do. Hey, would you look at the time? I've got to leave soon. Let me just put this half cup of coffee into the sink and run another quarter cup of water into it. And then just leave it there like a crazy person. Oh, and instead of brushing my teeth that are a huge key to my livelihood, I'm going to stop here at the mirror by the front door and inspect my teeth like a crazy person. Okay, I've got to get downstairs and catch a cab. Ugh, I hope I don't get a driver who's weird.
Yeah. Totally.
Bad news for him. He did.
Well, that was some dry toast. The driest of all toast.
Driest of toast. Yeah. With us finally, rounding us out, Brian, little Brian Malcolm P. Ibbett.
Oh, totally. Hi, local newspaper? Okay, kids, that's a thing from 1999 before the internet where people would pay money to get furniture ads and an accurate description of the things that happened yesterday. With me now? Okay, good. Hi, local newspaper? I'd like to place a classified ad. That's paper Craigslist. Ever wanted to be someone else? No, not you. That's the ad. Why do you keep falling for that? Anyway, the ad continued. The JM Inc. in the Merton Flemmer building has added some new experiences to our existing Being John Malkovich experience. First up, the perfect experience. See life through the eyes of a dog that's tired of waiting for the world to change. Be the golden retriever whose owner is a Grammy Award-winning musician who describes Jennifer Aniston's body as a wonderland. Yes, for $200, you can see what life is like being John Mayer's bitch. P.S. There's no room for squares in this head. Next up is an experience that's sure to give you an S-H-O-C-K in the USA. What's it like to be an undead rock star? Does it hurt so good? Find out for $250 when you're being John Mellencamp's lich. John Mellencamp's lich. Let's say that one more time. John Mellencamp's lich. Finally, living on the cheap side, save a few dollars, but experience a celebrity portal that has all the elements you're looking for, but won't turn any portal resident evil. Just $100 will get you the multipass you need for 15 minutes of being Mila Jovovich. Thank you very much.
Oh, no, that actually was pretty good. Last one nailed it.
Well done. There you go.
I like that the pricing structure is a little bit suspect to me, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, I know. You'd pay more to be Mila Jovovich than you would to be John Mayer's golden retriever.
Oh, right. Hell yeah. Or anything to do with Mellencamp. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Gosh,
all right.
Dang.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah. The movie. It's not a she. It's it.
You don't know. Later on, it was a she.
Well,
that's
for
what
a while. It was
later.
You never really knew, but it was.
Or was it her? What did he make?
It's a him. Oh, no. He made her. It's the movie Her.
Spike Jones. Right.
Her. Yeah. Also is in a couple of Jackass movies. So that's a good time. Anyway. Hey, being John Malkovich, actually directed Jackass 1.
Right, he was basically one of the crew. He was just the one who was moving the cameras around.
He was a Jack Gay or whatever the plural is.
Gaffer or a
he was listed as director on, I think, the second movie, maybe the first, maybe both. I don't remember. Plus, he always played in the show, and I think in the movie he always dressed up like the old lady whose boobs kept falling out. Do you guys remember that? It was like it was a prosthetic. So it was like a big dangly rubbery looking boob thing. And he would walk around like an old lady, had full body makeup, and would say, "Excuse me, sir," and walk up and try to get somebody's help. And as he would lurch forward, the boob would just go flop like out. And then the people would be left trying to figure out what the hell to tell her about her boob.
Hey, Ibby, you want to explain the 90s to the kids again? Right.
It was wardrobe malfunction.
But Spike Jonze now, considered a bit of an auteur. And,
right. He's also really close with Jack Black and Kyle Gass. And he's been in a lot of what they've done.
Yeah. So he's an interesting dude. But I also think that's right. He did that.
He did the Praise You video and the.
What's the one with what's his name?
Did he direct the one with Walken in it?
The flying around the hotel.
Weapon of Choice.
Yeah. Didn't he? I may have that wrong.
This man has done a lot of video shorts and music videos. So it's hard to keep up.
His hands are in lots of cookie jars, but he's great. We love the Spike Jones. Did he?
Okay. Directed by Spike Jones. Yep.
Okay, good. I love that video. It's still one of the greatest videos ever made. But anyway, this is Being John Malkovich. That's the movie he made. And it was 1999. And he was an up and comer at that point. And
Malkovich may have been around for a minute.
No,
Spike Jones.
Not him. Spike Jones.
Oh, Spike Jones.
And Charlie Kaufman. Like, this is a Charlie Kaufman movie as much as anything.
Oh, yeah. They're frequent collaborators. They would work together on their next film, which was The Spotless Mind Business, which I still haven't seen.
Or
have I seen part of it?
I think you'll enjoy that. I think you should make some room for it.
Yeah, I can't find Spike Jonze on Spotless Mind.
Yeah, that was directed by... Michelle Gondry, right?
Yeah.
I thought they worked together again. All right.
And it was...
But you'll still like it.
...by Kaufman.
Oh, I'm thinking of adaptation.
You're thinking adaptation. But seriously, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind belongs in the same 5-disc Blu-ray collection that Brian Dunaway is ultimately going to buy as Ben Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then
by the way, adaption, there's a fun movie.
Yeah. I never saw adaption either.
Yeah, and really the only
adaptation.
Yeah, the only movie that Kaufman and Spike Jonze worked on together that's considered great is Synecdoche, New York, which I remember seeing, and I don't remember anything about it.
Yeah, Synecdoche,
New York.
Yeah,
what? It's not. So that's a different city than Schenectady.
Correct.
Why would you have two?
Why would you have two of those?
What the hell is wrong with these people?
Synecdoche, New York is the name of the movie.
Synecdoche. You're right. I'm looking at the pronunciator here. I never knew that. That's weird. But Kaufman directed, right? He did both things, didn't he? Yeah. Director and writer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Kaufman, boy, they let him out of the out of the cage there, didn't they? They let him roll with it.
They locked him in a cage and then had PTSD flashbacks.
That's
yes,
right.
They did.
The one constant through all this conversation is that Catherine Keener's in all this shit. So she's just like his favorite muse or whatever. She's just in everything. And I think
she can be in everything.
Oh, yeah. She's great, dude. Freaking love that lady. And she looks great, by the way. She's like 60 something now and she looks great.
She's okay. But like everything in this movie, with one exception, everything in this movie we're going to describe as weird. Like everything.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing in this with one exception. And that is, of course, Charlie Sheen is Charlie Sheen.
Oh, yeah, that's
but
true.
I'll tell you, that's age Charlie Sheen was weird and
the
awesome.
The bald
extra, and they added like extra height to it, I think. I don't even think that was like, it was like, where's it end? Way over here.
Like a Pachycephalosaurus with that prosthetic forehead.
Yeah, he looked real weird. I didn't see that coming, by the way. I had no idea Charlie Sheen was in this.
I had totally forgotten.
Never saw this. We should say that real quick. So I'd never saw this as my first viewing. Anyone else first viewing here?
Saw this in the theaters and bought the DVD when it came out years and years and years ago for some reason, even though I probably only watched said DVD once or twice.
This is not a movie you repeat a lot, but I have seen it several times just over the years.
Yeah. And do we ever, has anyone ever unearthed the point of the low ceiling business? That ever
it's funny.
Oh, I mean
it's a funny idea.
It is.
Yeah, it's disjointed and is
but it's meant to be a MacGuffin, I mean, right? They're supposed to make me think at the end like I'm supposed to think about the suitcase in freaking Pulp Fiction, you know, where I'm sort of like, well, they never
sort
really,
of. I mean it's more of like here's a funny thing that we're explaining with a silly story when it was either a architectural mistake or it was a way for them to charge twice the rent for one floor. Because there's probably, I guess they never mentioned that the eighth floor then also has to be reduced.
Right. Or expanded. And then they just got rid of another floor. So, there's definitely going to be an oddity in the next floor's height. Right. And you got plenty of mezzanine levels in places. So you would think they would just have went that way. But I think they definitely said, what's that?
There are some buildings where they actually have a half floor that's got like, furnace equipment and air conditioning and all those systems and stuff.
Plumbing.
So that could easily be what the, you know, what the joke was, is that everyone's got this beautiful, lavish story about it, but really it was just, they decided, we can actually put office space on the furnace and air conditioning.
There's so many opinions. There's nothing written specific, you know, so anything that you think is like a really, you know, an explanation. This is an explanation, which is great. And I love all the explanations. Yeah. And I just think it was just to make the floor supernatural, because otherwise it was a regular floor with a hole behind the filing cabinet. Doesn't seem as mystical as a odd floor that you have to like, you know,
and then pop open. And then the door into Malkovich's brain is even shorter than the short doors on the floor. Like that, there was just like, there were these little things that were just so crazy funny.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know about funny. I'm going to give it more of a, because it's a different kind of funny, obviously, and it's very Spike Jones, but my feeling the entire time was this is a world where we are meant to notice that the characters don't seem to be bothered by all the weirdness. Like her at home with her monkeys and her lizards and her shit everywhere. Like, why is there a whole zoo in her house?
Well, I think it's kind of like when the, you know, the nurse gives you a shot. I think the shot of reality here, to think that, you know, somebody could enter Malkovich's consciousness in the way that they did and to be not in this world and not in that world. If you're distracting and doing a lot of hand waving, all that stuff doesn't seem as important.
It just, what I'm saying is it's just not straightforward like Ghostbusters, where Gozer used to be, you know, what's his name? Now he's this guy. Now Sigourney Weaver is the freaking other creature. And like, it's more obvious, a magical thing has happened. Therefore now we have this possession or whatever, and this thing they're like, we're gonna have that story, but surrounding it is gonna be padded with all this weird ass business that's just so
and
weird.
I think it's the weird ass business. It might be even like an intentional way to throw you off balance for the first 20 minutes of the film before the actual premise of this portal to John Malkovich's head, and that way you're already off balance of like this, all right, half floor and and John Cusack and Cameron Diaz looking like a, you know, the worst, the worst made up Hollywood people you've ever seen in your life.
It's a pretty drab and boring intro without the oddity.
Yeah.
I mean, so.
Oh, I agree. The movie's nothing without the oddity. You don't have that. This isn't much as, you know, this just is another like, oh, no, honey, I shrunk the kids. Oh, no. The grandma has been taken over by a man. Oh, no. Like, it's one of those stories. With the weird, though, you end up with a far different cake for dessert here. It's very different. Very weird. Everything. All the way down to, like, Catherine Keener's weird attitude and.
Right. Misdirection is one of the best things in storytelling, in my opinion. It's the thing that makes us laugh, gasp, and everything else. And I think it's very well played here.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit too much, because I actually, my viewing partner was like, yeah, this movie's stupid. But it felt okay to me.
Yeah. I think it holds up. I mean, as far as I didn't watch this and go, ugh, this was probably better in the day. I think it's fine. In fact, you could have.
I like the idea that a 20-year-old Jordan Peele was watching this movie in late 1999, going, "Oh, this is going to be scary someday."
Yeah, I like the accent you donned there for a brief second.
I was scared. The thing that scared me the most was Cameron Diaz's hair. Yeah. I was like, "Oh, wow, is that?"
She was for me.
It was 100% Cameron Diaz's neighbors. I was terrified of those people.
Oh yeah, shut up! Those guys were pretty pissed. Anytime that monkey made any or that ape made any noise at all, he was like up in arms. But this concept of like, hi, I do weird puppet things that are crazy intricate on the street and show people humping while kids are watching. Like everything about it is weird. It's all discordant and weird. And so when you do finally get to the meat of it, which is this otherwise kind of Disney-esque, this is a portal to someone's brain business.
Why did you just say Disney? I'm confused right now.
Because it just felt like
it's Inside Out.
Is it the fantasy aspect?
Is this the live action Inside Out that we've all been clamoring for?
I mean, what's the Freaky Friday is an example.
Right. It reminded me more of Coraline, because there's this trip through a small door.
I get that. As a trope, a small door that takes you somewhere is as old as freaking, I don't know if it's as old.
I got to go back and look.
The wardrobe thing from what's his name? The moot books. I can't think of his name.
The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
I know what you're talking about.
Where there's some kind of physical place that is a portal to somewhere else. Like Harry Potter does it. They all do it. And that, so it's not new. That part is not new. What's new here?
No, it's not.
Is let's coat it in weird and a thick layer of weird. And let's have that weird smell a little funny and make you feel a little uncomfortable. And at times make you scratch your head and say, what the freaking F are we watching? Like, that's the weird that makes the movie work. And without it, this movie's dumb. It's dumb. Because otherwise it's just I took over John Malkovich, which is weird in its own self. But it's true. Who cares?
Totally true. Yeah. If they go normal for the first 25 minutes of the film until he finds the door, then this is...
I'm bored.
This is a boring movie. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's actually where the story started, right? I think I read some trivia on this. I don't remember everything about it, but I do remember them saying they started with the kernel of the idea was that a man was tempted away from his wife, and then they just kept building on those with unique and interesting ideas.
Yeah, that like the original script was just turned down by everybody because it didn't have a lot of the weirdness yet. And for like 6 years, Kaufman just kept adding weird bits to it whenever he would think of something funny. That's how you should make a movie like this, in my opinion. You should. Yeah. It should take a long time to figure out all this crap.
Well, as to why he chose John Malkovich, I have some scrutiny. There are multiple posts in the IMDb trivia, which we refer to a lot on the show, saying that he had nobody else in mind and never wanted anyone but John Malkovich. Like, that was his idea the whole time. He wanted nobody else.
Being Sylvester Stallone just doesn't cut it.
But
just,
later on, there's stuff about they almost considered Tom Cruise, and then they talk to so-and-so and so-and-such, and there's like all these other ones.
God, I would watch being Tom Cruise. I would watch that.
No, I actually think it would have worked. I actually think that
would have absolutely worked. It would have been our first time we've really seen a weird off-the-wall,
wacky.
Here's
the thing. We think that based on a lot of the weird stuff he's done since, when we saw him in Tropic Thunder, we went, oh my gosh, that guy he played in Tropic Thunder, clearly he can do weird shit and and do it with his face, you know, and stare at the camera with pride. Like, that's no problem for Tom Cruise. But up till now, like up till 99, we didn't think of him that way at all.
I know.
So I don't know.
Could we explain away the behavior of some celebrities like Tom Cruise by saying that maybe somebody did find a portal into his head and said, I'm going to jump on Oprah's couch. Watch this.
Yeah. Yeah. Check it. That was actually John Cusack. It was never.
It was John Cusack. Oprah, I'm in love.
I'm willing to go along with the it was going to be Malkovich all the way along story, although it's useless. Like, why invent that trivia? Mm-hmm. But I go with it because this movie so normalizes Malkovich as an actor that it's almost kind of like breathtaking. Like, at this point, you know, like, you're going in to see this movie and you've seen he got an Academy nomination for In the Line of Fire, and he was in these like serious movies like Mulholland Falls and crazy movie like Con Air, right? Mm-hmm. And so you've seen John Malkovich, you know, like, he's an actor, but you don't really think of him, you know, as a, like, a person. And having him be the person that gets, you know, that gets ultimately taken over by this madman puppeteer, it's just like, it's
no, perfect. Not madman, horny. Go ahead.
Horny puppeteer. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but our libido drives men crazy.
Okay.
Yeah. And once you start seeing it, right? And he's like, he gets in a cab and the cabbie's telling him, I saw you in a movie that he wasn't in, and so on. Like, it's so normal that it's just like, I can't imagine anyone else.
Yeah. Except John Malkovich. It's the right call. And if the trivia is true and can be taken at face value, then you stick with your guns and get Malkovich to do it. But this even claims, like, Malkovich at one point said, you should use somebody else. And, like, Kaufman's like, well, then I'm off the project. Like, I just don't know how serious this is. But it's also this fourth wall business of, like, you know, the guy's playing himself, but obviously he's not playing himself. And I feel like up to that point, we didn't have a lot of that. Like, I'm trying to think of a good example. Like, Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle is a good example when they drug out Doogie Howser and he played himself, basically.
You know, what's the best example? Is the Jackass stuff. That's the best example of people putting it all out there, being themselves, and being, you know, like, being absolutely exposed. Yeah, like, it's of course Spike Jonze was best friends with Johnny Knoxville. Of course. Yeah. Like, the performance he gets out of John Malkovich in this movie is unique. Yeah. You know, like, it's nothing you'll ever see.
Getting him to dance around.
This is one of the most challenging roles he's ever played. I don't know if you've ever said that or not, but I mean, trying to play yourself outside yourself, that would be that's a tall order.
And it's more difficult than what Neil Patrick Harris did in Harold and Kumar, because he had to play kind of a dickish version of himself.
Yeah. He's playing what people think of him as, right?
Well, exactly. In this case, yes. In the case of so in Neil Patrick Harris's case, it was a play against type. Everyone knows he's a nice guy, and so we're gonna have him be a dick. And that worked because it was this opposite of what you expect from a dude like that. And that happens a lot. Like, I watched that Episodes show.
Yes.
Based on Emmett's recommendation, actually. And Matt LeBlanc plays himself, but that's not really him.
No, he's
not
way that dick. More
over the top.
Way more self-centered. Yeah,
it's like Joey got mashed up with somebody like Charlie Sheen, and that's that character. And it works because of whatever. But you guys are right. John Malkovich is kind of playing straight Malkovich until the possessions and the, you know, the experiences and everything, which makes it, I think, way more interesting than if they'd have made him a bit of a scandal or made him I don't know, something else. I mean, really all they did is say, yeah, he's really focused on acting and he's in rehearsals and he's busy getting calls and he's got to go down to the play, and, you know, like, it's just
and he gets, you know, I imagine that thing in the taxi at the I really loved you in that Jewel Heist movie. Yeah. I wasn't in a Jewel Heist movie.
Right.
You know, and all that stuff, I'm sure, is just taken right from real John.
Yeah, real life.
You know, he gets that stuff. And he's such an interesting dude, because the minute you see his face, you know exactly who he is. No matter what movie you're watching, that's just John Malkovich's mark on film.
The first Malkovich that I got was Con Air. Because, I mean, I never noticed Malkovich. I may have seen him in things. But Con Air, I was like,
daddy's going to be here on June 16th. I get to meet my daddy on my birthday, which is June 16th.
That's when I looked him up and said, who is this guy? Who is this guy?
He's
well, for me, it's
dangerous liaisons for me.
Yes. Okay. I was going to say Empire of the Sun. 100% Empire of the Sun is my first.
Oh, really? Mine's that one where he's what's it called? Hold on. I got to find it. It's way back in the,
like I had said, I'd seen him in previous movies, but
that was the first one where you looked.
Yeah, that was just the guy. I'm like, oh, that's that guy. Like Lenny Small in Of Mice and Men. I definitely remember him being in it, but I didn't think anything of it. I'm just like, yeah, this is
here. It is
a choice role.
He was in the Killing Fields in 1984, and I remember that he was a reporter hanging out with dude from Law and Order. Can't think of his name.
Sam Waterston.
Yeah, Sam Waterston. That's it. And he was great in that. And I remember from then on going, every time I'd see his face, I'm like, oh, it's that guy from Killing Fields. Oh, it's that guy from Killing Fields. And he just got better and better. And if we don't watch In the Line of Fire, we're bad people.
Yeah, we have to. Yeah.
That movie's great. And he eats that thing up. Like, he's just insanely good in it. Oh, he's in Billions? Yeah. Oh, man, I got to watch Billions.
What
would you say?
Billions, the show Billions. Remember Billions?
Really? Okay.
Or I shouldn't say remember Billions. It's still on the air, but he's somebody.
No, I think Mulholland Falls is a good potential film sacker.
But what's cool is in Billions, he plays a guy named Grigor Andolov, which sounds like the guy he played in Rounders.
In Rounders, yeah.
Which sounds like somebody's going to say, Manny. Give him his Manny. Yeah, that's what I want. Oh. Is this our only?
He is of Ukrainian descent. When I was looking up, I was trying to find other actors. The only one I was able to find was Mila Jovovich to fit my intro. So that's why I thought that was kind of playing around with that. Yeah. But when I was looking up other Ukrainian actors, or when I found out he was Ukrainian, I was looking up other Ukrainian actors. But he's got that that background. Certainly doesn't have an accent or anything like that. Probably first generation parents, American born. Yeah. Yeah, but
I wonder if that Manny accent is based on his parents or something.
That's based on a family member for sure. Oh yeah, he was born in Christopher, Illinois.
Yeah.
My note here was as I'm watching this movie, I went through every Christopher Guest film because I was like, how was this guy never in a Christopher Guest film? It just, he feels like one of them, you know? There's something about Malkovich.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
He feels like he's Christopher Guest's next door neighbor or something.
I think he's just got too highfalutin of a resume and is too recognizable. Otherwise, I agree with you 100%. I could see him in that cast. I could see him being part of all those movies. I just watched Best in Show and I could see him being just about anybody in there if he wanted.
Yeah.
Right.
But
he was married to Glenn Headley for a while. I had no idea.
Wait, who's that?
From Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. She's the one who pulls him over. She had Tess Trueheart in the Dick Tracy movie.
Oh, I got to watch that too.
Okay. They're not married now?
They're not married now. Nope. Divorced in 1988 and she died a couple years ago.
That was the sequel Leaving John Malkovich. Yeah.
Right. You know what's funny is I had totally forgotten, because it's been a couple years since I've watched this movie. I had totally forgot Cameron Diaz was the wife for some reason. I think she does such a convincing turnaround because she's already been something about Mary at this point in time, which was like, The Mask was actually the first time I remember seeing Cameron Diaz. Yep. And, you know, she just lit up the screen for all those movies, just being the center. And here she was just like,
yeah, like you're cursed right if you're in background. This. You're cursed if you're in this movie to be made ugly by Spike Jonze, with one exception. There's a big exception in the middle of the movie, but you know, Catherine Keener gets to look
she's like
a normal human being for most of the movie. But in the middle of the movie, Catherine Keener gets all dressed up and, you know, is seducing John Malkovich, who keeps getting dressed up even at 4:11 in the morning.
Right? Yeah.
And it's like Jones is trying to say something there. I couldn't figure out what he was trying to say, but everyone else in the movie is ugly. Like, he goes out of his way to make sure that
appreciate that. I like that. I like a movie where not everybody has to look great. It creates some interesting contrast. And it also, let's say this about Catherine Keener's characterization here. She is great in everything, as it suggested earlier. She's just awesome. And I hear she's in a thing. I'm excited because I just think she eats the scene up and ends up stealing the movie. And she does that here in lots and lots of ways. But she is both really entertaining to watch and a horrendous human being at the same time.
Yeah, which makes her the ultimate villain, right? Because she is the ultimate puppeteer, and she never goes in to Malkovich.
No. And she
just
so
takes
flippant.
Everybody's word for it.
She's so flippant and so it's just the worst kind of a-hole. It's like,
yeah,
you the world is happening around you and you're just laughing at it. Like she's a troll before the internet really took off. And
right.
And I
can't believe the puppeteer asked me out.
She claims she's
dismissing, right? Dismissing people that she feels are beneath her and stuff like that. There's a great trivia in the IMDb that says that somebody came up with the theory that Get Out is the sequel to Being John Malkovich. Yeah, that her character
Randy was referred to.
It's like you were saying earlier about Jordan Peele. Probably
Jordan Peele. Yeah, but that's interesting. I could totally see that.
Basically, her daughter who helps wrangle the guy in is the daughter that has John Malkovich in, or has John Cusack in her. And
I have questions.
Well, I just want to stop you right there. Yeah. This movie does not want to make sense about how that all works.
Oh, right, sure.
No. Ask your question.
Oh, no.
There's not a good answer.
No, there's their answers, but they're only to satisfy yourself. Because I started to work out, you know, some theories. I always like working out the theories. And I got a little ways in. I was like, there's not enough connective tissue between any of these things to create a good, you know, just wow, I figured it out theory. And the reason why is because it's not supposed to be. There's supposed to be a lot of elements that are supposed to make you ask questions but never actually answer anything. It's like watching the third season of Lost. You know, it's
a little bit.
Right, you kind of have to suspend disbelief. Like, how are they getting all those people off the New Jersey Turnpike that are in line?
Yeah, and where are they falling from? I mean, are they falling from, you know, 5 feet, 10 feet? Because, I mean, we're only seeing them hit, but...
I made notes about that. I'm like, how high up are they falling? And does anyone else see them? Does anyone driving by see this ever? And, like, I had all these questions. And you're meant to ask them because this movie's tempting you to do it. But you're also... It's supposed to tempt you and not give you anything. It's supposed to say, look at this weird ass thing. Low ceilings. Weird. Guess you're wondering why those are there. And guess we're never going to tell you. Meep, meep. Like there's like, it's almost like we're getting pranked.
When Malkovich goes inside Malkovich and he's just in a room full of Malkoviches, I'm like, obviously there is no straightforward answer because that doesn't follow any rules.
It's the rule of Ron Silver can't touch other timeline Ron Silver where they turn into a pile of goo.
Right.
I love that. Like there's a lot to like about them playing around with me that way. Like I usually some movies that don't know how to do this right and they annoy me. This one just goes all in and says, "Yeah, he's the puppet guy and his wife's got a zoo in the house and it barely looks like Cameron Diaz, but whatever. And now he's going to go get a job at a place where the ceilings are half low and no one seems bothered by it. And they even made a video to explain it in the 70s. And it's fine.
No one's happy. And who's really happy in their skin? Too. Right. Who's really happy in their skin? Maxine is happy in her skin. You know, Malkovich is happy in his skin. But everybody else is identity struggling.
Yeah.
It has to be someone else.
Yeah.
Especially Dr. Lester. Poor. Oh. You know, Poor Dr. Lester and his speech impediment.
Yeah, I know. Right? Right?
That was actually a good little run.
I apologize if you can't understand what I'm saying.
It's a joke for sure, and they definitely commit to it. That keeps coming up the whole freaking movie. But I actually thought that was like the one thing in the movie that took me out. Like,
oh, really?
This movie is trying too hard to make me laugh at the woman who doesn't understand anybody has a degree in speech therapy or something. Like, no, I
so is it like the right.
impedimentologist, I think is the way that
I mean, but she projects. So it was actually tied in with self-confidence that I kind of started like pulling little things together in that. I was like, okay, if you're self-confident enough, you can make your own reality. And I still, like I said, I started pulling this stuff together and I'm like, you know what? I get a big pile of stuff and there's this is just a big pile of stuff. Yeah.
And you know why it took you out of the movie, Rand? I'll tell you exactly why. Because all the other jokes aren't paid off. You don't get a real payoff on the 7.5 floor thing.
Interesting.
You don't get a payoff on the Cameron Diaz keeping monkeys in the house thing. But you get the payoff joke of like, here's the setup. Oh, she can't understand him. And then he thinks it's the speech impediment.
I got the payoff on the monkey because the monkey had the PTSD flashback.
PTSD flashback.
What you guys are talking about is foreshadowing, right? Yeah. And it is the trope of the film. This film is so laden with this one trope that it's almost hard. Yeah, it's hard to follow it almost. Like, you know, he's a puppeteer who is down on his luck because there's this other master puppeteer who gets all the attention. And so no
chicken the bucket disappears.
Oh yeah, totally.
Wait, chicken I the
think,
bucket.
I think John Cusack killed that guy.
Oh. It must have. They talked about this, you know, this nemesis that Cusack had, who was a popular puppeteer. But once he became the king of puppeteering, they acted like there'd never been another puppeteer.
You're right.
And I do like that. I you kind of expect that to be. Oh God, I'm sure there's a Ben Stiller movie where there's that kind of supervillain competitor. The only two people in the field, basically, who are competing. But I really wanted to see more of a he's the David Copperfield to this guy's David Blaine or something.
Right,
like that.
Right.
Yeah, they never did pay that off.
Like how many times does Cameron Diaz say that the ape has some childhood trauma and then we finally get to see it? The foreshadowing is so thick in this movie that it's almost like unbearable.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's the unbearable lightness of being. Is that right, another Kaufman thing?
Unbearable lightness of John Malkovich.
It sounds like a Kaufman movie. I don't know if it is or not.
Anyway. I will say, though, that the puppetry work is amazing.
It's the wooden marionette puppetry. I mean, if you've never seen the film, it's not the Muppet puppet we think of.
Yeah. Right. Yes, marionette style. Now, I know the guy on stage dancing was somebody in a costume that was suspended from wires and moving, but that was, again, that was still so well done that you kind of have to look for the movements that are not possibly controlled.
No, I was blown away by it. I have always admired marionette style stuff because I think it really skims a line of this is stupid or this is really artistic.
Right.
And it's really hard to nail. Like,
you definitely question someone's mental state when they're really good at marionette.
Yeah, like, you're either like...
It's like being a crazy cat lady, right? Because
you go either full Thunderbirds or you go really artistic, and this was really artistic and well done. I was blown away by it.
This movie starts with him being supernaturally good. Like the first scene, you see a puppet roll on stage, and it's just like, okay, that's not possible with strings. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, oh right, this guy is like, he's magic.
He's an auteur, man. He knew what he was doing, and I wasn't sure where things were going when that started. And I just see this hippie face. I didn't know who it was.
It's kind of hard to tell at first, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was like, so where is this?
And wants to believe that Malkovich filmed his dance first, and they built the puppetry around Malkovich's improvisational dance.
I hope so.
Now, how much of that was Malkovich? Because I mean, they did it pretty good. The body double was either pretty good.
Running up the wall at the jump was pretty definitely good. Not Malkovich.
Yeah, but the rest of it was him, and he's got serious dad bod in this movie. You always think of Malkovich as really gaunt and sort of skinny and you know, sort of curved and all that. And he just looks like a normal.
He's something normal like 46 in this movie. Yeah. John Malkovich is.
Yeah.
And, all right. That's fine.
The older he gets, the more I like him. I loved him in that Bird Box thing where he played Douglas, I think it was the character. Fantastic in the Bird Box last year, 2 years ago. Just awesome. Oh, the older he gets, 2018. Yeah. The older he gets, the more I enjoy him. And I can't say that for every actor, but for whatever reason, John Malkovich, when he shows up in a thing now, I get just a little more excited than I would if he was, in his 30s or 40s.
Now, Octavia Spencer, who was the lady who helped Cusack get into the 7.5 floor, I was pleasantly surprised she was there. We talked about it pre-show a little bit.
Yeah.
Being like, I wish you could have hung around more because she was the most grounded of everybody we were dealing with. Everybody else seemed like they were living in a fantasy world. She seemed like, this is normal. This is the thing. Well, I deal with it every day. Here it is.
Let me just grab a crowbar that happened to me in the elevator.
Yeah.
She's such a blink and you'll miss it cameo.
Yeah.
And she's in it. I mean, this is like her fifth thing. This is like, she's very early in her career. As far as movies go, there's a bunch of TV stuff, but she's very, very early and she looks the same as she does today. And she's amazing. And now she's can't stop getting work. Look at her. I mean, she's just like one of the busiest people in Hollywood, but But yeah, I like that part, except where does she keep that crowbar? Where'd that come from?
In the elevator. They leave it in the elevator.
Yeah, and you don't even notice the elevator is all ganked up until they zoom into it. And you're like, right. Wow, this happens a lot.
It has to happen several times a day, I'm sure. Right, yeah, a ton in the morning, a ton in the evening.
Well, she's in that witches thing.
Yeah, that new Witches 2020 thing. Yeah,
oh, has anybody watched that? That keeps coming up at the very top of my... You should watch this Netflix.
Yeah. I've heard good stuff by Netflix. I took that back. I said I heard good things, but all I really have heard is Netflix.
Netflix says it's good.
Right. Netflix says it's good.
What I've heard is that if you're a fan of the book stuff it's based on, then you'll like it less. But if you don't have any idea, then you'll really like the standout.
Yeah. I didn't read the book, so I'm good.
Yeah. So I didn't know there were books, so I'll be fine. No, it doesn't bother me. Hey, check this out. Do you guys believe this? Maybe this needs some scrutiny. The original script, again, this is contradictory to Kaufman's statement that he only ever saw John Malkovich in the role, but the original script called for Kevin Bacon in the place of Malkovich and eventually as Charlie Sheen. Now, I think I would have preferred Kevin Bacon instead of Charlie Sheen.
Yeah. Being Kevin Bacon? Oh, or that role. Okay,
yeah, that role. To get Sheen out of there. We didn't know Sheen was such a psycho yet, though. So
I think at the time, I think it was the right choice. I think Sheen was more of the creep that was questionable. It's like, you know, he could be a creep, so I'm going to buy it. And then we found out he is. And it's not as funny when it's true, right?
It's like, oh, hot alien lesbians. Awesome. Yeah. Like, oh, okay. Well, that's playing to type. Yeah.
The thing is, in this movie, he plays it straight. That's the craziest thing about the movie is Charlie Sheen is the voice of reason in this situation. He's like, no, that's not happening. No, you're just high. You just did some pot.
You're just high, man. It's okay. It's good.
That's the other thing I saw in there that I just didn't see. And I wonder if any of you guys did. Of course, we all saw Sean Penn. He plays a little bit of a role, but Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston are in this for like a brief second.
Yeah, very brief.
I didn't see it.
Winona Ryder?
I missed it.
Was that most of that stuff on TV, though? That was an actual live, though, right? I'm trying to remember now.
On TV when they're talking about John Malkovich's history and this.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about. Turn.
Yeah, probably.
Well, I thought maybe he was in the, like in one of the audiences of one of the live.
Because the interview is obvious with Penn.
But I never saw
that.
But they were going out then. Jennifer. Well, I guess they weren't married, but they were together. Brad Pitt and Jennifer. He was down with her rotten milk breath. He was fine with it. Didn't bother him. You know, he's a pretty easygoing guy, that Brad Pitt. You know, we always check F bombs. Well, this movie had F bombs, but it had more of another word, which was the name of John Malkovich. His name is said over 130 times.
Most of it happens 80, in that one scene.
Yeah, 80 of those are just
Malkovich.
Yeah. So now it holds the record. I just want to put it out there. It holds the record now for the most John Malkovich is used in a film. Good job.
Do you feel weird looking at a woman with big cleavage that just happens to have John Malkovich's face?
Yes.
Yeah, that was disturbing. That's the first time we'd experienced that, right? Maybe. I don't know. We see it all the time now.
I mean, is that the first time we've seen a woman with big cleavage that has John Malkovich's face? I'd say that's the first time.
Only time? I don't know about that.
Yeah. Well, you find me another time, and that'll be cool. And it was also... I mean, whatever, 99, we were doing cool stuff with CGI and stuff.
It was great CGI.
Yeah, it great to the point that it was really disconcerting. I didn't like
seeing it. Yeah, I was looking for cracks in the pavement and visible scotch tape and baling wire to pull that thing off.
And also props to Spike Jonze. His career has featured films where they very sparingly but usefully use things like CGI. So this is an example here. When he did Where the Wild Things Are, what made that? I really liked Where the Wild Things Are movie. I know some people split on it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too.
But I loved it because you had full body, full suit puppetry going on, and the faces were green screen, and then they animated the eyes, nose, mouth stuff later to match with the actors. And
I was a little worried going in because I read the book, and I was like, I'm not sure if this is going to be as good as the book.
I loved it.
But,
loved his take on that.
It's a joke. The book is like 5 pages long.
Yeah, it's barely even a book. But I just love that. And what's his name? Tony Soprano's in it.
Gandolfini?
Yeah, James Gandolfini plays the main monster guy. And it's just, if you guys haven't seen that, freaking see it. It's great. Anyway, another Spike Jonze.
Why 44? Why is it ripe at 44?
What? Oh, who?
Oh, another one of those things. Like they discovered this along the way. They just state it and they're never going to explain it.
Right. Yeah. And how many people are in that moving consciousness? Because if the guy currently occupying the guy had brought in people before and now he's doing it again. You know what? That was the most. I love those kind of crazy ideas. And I'm glad they didn't go too far into it, because it's a good way to go insane. It's just not. It's such a weird thought.
It's so weird. And the thing toward the end, the girl in the pool, and then just like the way they ended that thing, I don't know where my head was, but I was just like, what the frick am I watching? What is this thing? Well, like, I still really don't know. And maybe that's why I got nominated for what, best picture that year? Yeah. No, best director.
Any movie that can make you walk away and go, what did I just watch? And you have to think about it. And it's like, what did I really like it? I think that's I did. It occupies a large mind space, and therefore you don't forget it as quickly. So I personally, overall, I like the film. I don't watch it too often because it's kind of like Groundhog Day. Love Groundhog Day, but there's too much splashing around in the same pool for too long.
Right before we started recording, Scott just gave us a final thought before starting, and it just blew my mind.
Oh, whoa.
And Scott said, "So let's talk about the craziest movie we've seen this year." And I'm like, "Slow down,
yeah. Let's talk about that.
This is 2020. It's been going on for decades. 2020, we've seen Space Jam, we've seen Zapped.
Yeah,
I mean, it is not unusual for us to watch just batshit movies.
Yeah, but this is the one. Right. This one is genuinely weird in a way that isn't artificially weird. Like those other movies you mentioned,
purity test.
Yeah. Well, I realize that sounds strange to say that, but what I mean is
intentionally weird, like as opposed to Zapped, which just happened to be weird. Well, we're like,
and Zapped is the perfect example of what we were talking about early. Normal, weird premise. Yeah. Everybody react to the weird premise and then back to normal at the end.
Yeah.
Whereas this is weird. And then a weird premise. It's a meatloaf cake with toothpaste frosting.
That's horrendous. That is a horrible idea. Oh my gosh. Meatloaf cake with toothpaste frosting. I'll never forget this moment that we're having now.
I mean, your teeth will be clean and you'll be full.
I just want to point out, you can just say meatloaf. You don't have to say meatloaf cake. It's meatloaf
is a cake.
Yes. Yeah, but there's something about calling it. It's like saying man wiener. It's funnier to say meatloaf cake. I like that.
Meatloaf
better.
Cake.
Yeah.
Well, it becomes a cake when you put the toothpaste frosting. Otherwise, it's just meatloaf.
Yeah, but I don't want to overstate the point. But this kind of weird is art. This is a packaged, finessed weird. Those other things are very artificial that you mentioned. Like Space Jam is so. Not just predictable, but just such a conceit. It's like, oh, I'm in cartoon world now. Like, it's just not the same kind of weird. And probably because the way Brian put it, it's like it's your loaf of bread has reality on the ends and then magic in the middle. This thing has magic from start to finish and everyone thinks it's normal. And that makes it different. I'd put it in a different category. I can't compare it to those others. I wish I could. And I know they're all made up, right? These are movies. So it's not like it's not like I'm saying, oh, this one was real.
Not a documentary, Scott. It's
exactly. I'm not saying that, but there's a reason it was highly praised and got an Oscar nomination and all this other stuff, because it's more than Zapped, you know?
Right. That's what saying on the box. Definitely more than Zapped.
Being John Malkovich, more than Zapped.
More than Zapped.
If you like Zapped, well.
Yeah.
Maybe you like this better.
This, by the way, was the only film that year to get Best Director nomination, but not Best Picture nomination. So it's a little bit weird, right?
That is weird.
It doesn't happen very often. It happens, but it doesn't happen that often.
We like what you did with the movie, but
Spike Jonze is like 30 and they're just like, they'd never heard of him. They're not going to nominate him for this.
Yeah. They're like, is that guy with the rubber old lady boob that popped out on Jackass? And I guess Brad Pitt's friends with all these people anyway, because Brad Pitt was on Jackass once. You guys remember that? Where he was like getting kidnapped in front of a theater.
I remember this, but now I think I'm making it up.
They threw him in a van. The Jackass guys jumped out all masked up, grabbed Brad Pitt in public, threw him in a van and then looked like they were, you know, kidnapping.
This feels
him.
More really like a
actually
punk.
Kidnapping.
Yeah.
It does feel more like punked, except, but that Brad Pitt was probably in on it, which makes it.
Oh, he was totally in on it. Yeah. Yeah. The punked is, that's the great thing. This is the reason I can watch Jackass and not punked. Jackass, when they would do pranks, were not about pranking. If they pranked anyone, it was either each other or the world. There was never any other. There was no like focus on this old poor old lady who doesn't know what's happening. It was more like, you guys are idiots, so we're going to do a thing that punches Steve-O in the nuts. I love Jackass. Have I mentioned that on the show? I really
do. The only
do.
People getting hurt in this situation are the Jackasses themselves.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Only yeah, they even go so far as to make a carve out for Wee Man. You can tell that Wee Man is more loved by all of the rest of them than they love the rest of them. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. Also, Wee Man would have loved the 7.5 floor in this movie. He would have had a great time in there. Yeah. Wee Man was great. Anyway, let's get to what I thought was gross. And here's the thing.
Gross.
Okay. Give me a second here, because this is a movie where people go into someone's brain and then fall out covered in brain mud onto the New Jersey Turnpike.
Yeah.
So
not gross, though.
By the way, what the hell is a turnpike? Who ever decided to take the words turn and pike, which both mean something, and put them together and it doesn't mean anything? I don't understand that word.
Turnpike. I have no idea.
Pike of the turn.
I would like to believe that Scott was grossed out by the chimp on the countertop during dinner cooking.
Nope, I want an ape, so it doesn't. That doesn't bother me. I'm fine with that.
I'm going in with dry toast internal monologue chewing noises.
Let's.
oh yeah, of course the eating. Oh yeah,
yeah. Let's give you guys a good old for that one.
Look at that.
That's number one. Now there are two things that kind of they tied for first, and so. Correct on number one. What do you think number two was? And I'll tell you, number two.
Be slurping coffee, maybe.
As much as it wasn't gross. It's weird because, all right, I'll just tell you what it was. I wouldn't mind. The idea of Catherine Keener's finger in your mouth is not that obscene. But having it in John Malkovich's mouth, something's gross about that. Can't put my finger on it. it's a weird. That's weird. Don't be doing that. Don't be putting your finger in that guy's mouth.
John Malkovich's mouth.
Yeah.
They criminally underused the bird in this movie. There was a great bird actor, and I just like I couldn't stop thinking about this guy that I used to see at the pet store. There was a pet store that I would go to get dog food, and then I learned I could buy the same dog food at Albertson's, and it was less money.
For a lot
but
less,
anyway,
yeah.
I used to go to this pet store, and there was a guy who worked there that he was a checkout guy, and he had a bird, and it was his pet bird, and it stood on the back of his neck, like on the collar of his shirt. This bird just hung out there all his life. That was where his bird was. And of course, you know what that means, right? There was a streak of bird shit down the back of this guy's shirt. Like I had to stop going there and thinking about this, because it was just like it was so gross to me that this guy had, this movie brought that all up for me again. Like these people live in you just know their apartment smells horrible,
right? Yeah, it has to, right?
Like yeah,
that, but part of that unreality was them walking around as if it didn't, and just saying things like, "Oh, the lizard's still sick. Can you take care of him? Yeah, I'll take care of it. We'll see you later. Okay, no problem." Like as if it's just a normal house full of normal things, instead of it being this giant freaking zoo hoarder house. With just every piece.
Zoo hoarder house.
Zoo hoarder
this
house.
Week on whatever.
But they ignored it. Like they ignored it in a way that I found really disconnecting.
Well, they ignored each other. I actually liked that. I thought that was appropriate. It was two individuals not in touch with themselves and definitely on two different paths, living in the same household, trying to be tolerant of one another. I thought that was actually pretty spot on.
She just did not look like her. Like there's even stuff in the trivia about how the cast would like lose track of her because she just didn't look like Cameron Diaz.
Yet.
Yeah. She's like, her scene's up. Where is she? And she's like, I'm right here. And they're like, oh shit. You don't look anything like the Better Call, or not Better Call Saul. What is it? Somebody Like Mary. What is it?
Mary. Something About Mary.
Something About Mary.
Somebody Liked Mary.
Somebody was okay with Mary.
I was going to say sperm hair, but I couldn't think of anything.
Oh.
You know, sperm hair. So I wrote a note here. I says, is this art or fart? And I'm still not totally sure. Like, is he having a go with us? You know, like is Spike Jonze and Charlie Coffin just going suckers, or did they make a piece of art here? I don't know.
So I want to argue that fart can be art.
Okay.
Like it's possible. It's not always, it doesn't always work. Right. Like Jackass is the perfect example, right? We are just laughing at fart when we watch Jackass. Sure. There's like, it is practically impossible for them to make art in that setting. Right.
Right.
But this movie kind of asks a question, you know, like I was talking about everybody being ugly, you know, it's like, can everybody be ugly and act? Can everybody be ugly and deliver lines that actually make you feel something, right? Like you really got to feel something when suddenly John Cusack is like rapidly in love with Catherine Keener. Like it's embarrassment. It's cringe. It's so on. It's art. It's gotta be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's art. Yeah. Her performance alone makes it art for me. I think she was amazing.
Yeah. Cameron Diaz's character was working at a pet store, bringing pets home because she wanted to be a mother, but she didn't really want to be a mother. She wanted to be in love.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's portrayed like kind of gross and weird. Mm-hmm. And that takes the, you know, the just ugliness of it and makes it art, I think.
Yeah. I think you're probably right. There's not a ton else to say except, I think people should see it at least once. And like you said, it's not one you're going to sit down and go, all right, my 50th watch through of Being John. You're not going to do that.
No.
What's a quality of a movie that makes you watch it multiple times? Like, I think I have an answer for this myself, but I'm curious, really, like Brian Dunaway. Like, Brian Dunaway has talked before about movies that you can just put on. But I want to know, give me a quality, though. Like, something that, you know, like something that differentiates a movie. Because you can put anything on, right?
It's got to be a movie where you discover new things every time you see it. I feel like Endgame is going to have that for me. Avengers Endgame.
That's part of it, maybe for some.
Ready Player One, maybe. I don't know.
But like, I just watched Fargo for the millionth time the other day, the movie, and I never get tired of watching it. But I don't feel like I'm there for anything new.
That's just a quality movie that. Yeah.
Yeah. If that's on, I'm watching that. Like, I just can't help it. And Fury Road's that way for me. I feel that way about.
Yeah. I mean, any Empire movie that makes you feel like you could live there is a movie that you can watch over and over again.
Well, it doesn't even have to be that. I would not want to live in the Fight Club world, but I could watch that movie.
You wouldn't, but you kind of want to. You say no, but you're kind of like, I wouldn't want to live it every day.
Yeah. I'd like to live in that world, Brian, but you know the first rule. I'm not supposed to say that.
Right.
You wish that you were that person so that you could live in that world. How about that? Maybe that's
you just want to jiggle the dresser and have the wiener move. That's what you want to do. I get it. I know how you are.
I know I've said this 100 times on FilmSack, but like for me, a big, big thing in a movie that connects to me and makes me want to ever see it again is music and using the music right in the right places. And this movie didn't capture me that way at all.
No.
Like not even a little bit.
No.
No.
I couldn't tell you much about the music. It felt like I hardly heard any of it. And then the stuff you heard at the most, it felt like it was in the weird puppet stuff or moments where like that. I can't think of even a moment where it was like, oh, well, the music really fits this scene. It wasn't, that was kind of mute.
Right. The music was not used to tie anything together here.
No.
I mean, it was no unified movement.
I just realized what the common thing is for the movies I'll just watch anytime over and over. It's the Coen brothers made them. I'll watch all their movies over and over. I'll watch No Country for Old Men like right now. No problem. Let's turn it on.
Please don't. We're doing a podcast.
Well, you reminded me of it because of the no music thing. But yeah, like it doesn't matter kind of which movie.
No music for old men.
Fascinating that your prototypical Coen movie was No Country for Old Men, because having come out of this, I was actually watching John Malkovich come away and say, it made me think of Raising Arizona for some reason.
I mean, I'll watch that a drop of a hat as well. Honestly, it doesn't matter. You give me any of them. I'll even watch that freaking George Clooney, more straightly played one, whatever that's called. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, the other one with him and Chicky Babe.
Burn Before Reading.
Burn Before Reading?
No.
Burn After Reading?
Burn After Reading?
Yeah, that's the one. That's
Burn After Reading.
I'll even watch that. Because
how about Read While Burning?
I will gladly admit it's not their best film, but I'll still do it. Like, I think the Coen brothers have my number. I don't know what's going on with those guys. It's bastards. Hey guys, let's talk some more about Hawthorne. Really, really like these guys. They're a premium tailored personal care brand, making it really, really easy for guys like us to smell and feel their best. Yeah, that's right, ladies. We need our personal care products as well. And I'm really happy to be getting mine from Hawthorne. Like legitimately, 90% of my shower today was with Hawthorne products, and I couldn't be happier about it. If you're looking to take your self-care routine to the next level, Hawthorne helps you with high-quality products tailored specifically to your needs. They give you free shipping on your order, and if you decide you're not satisfied with your product, they even give you a free shipping on the return and give you new suggestions based on your feedback. So let's say you got some cologne. You're like, I don't know if this is the right cologne for me. They got you covered. They'll take good care of you. Anyway, it's really easy. I took the little quiz. They give you a quiz up front. Super short. They ask some questions that may or may not determine the kind of stuff you'd like or need. Do you have sensitive skin? Do you have rough skin? Like, those sorts of things. It's quick. It's easy. And my results were great because the stuff they sent me has been awesome. I smell good right now. Anyway, it's really, really great. I want you guys to go check them out. And take the quiz. It's super easy. It's super fast. And you'll be in and out of there in no time with some of the best personal care products I've ever seen. That's Hawthorne.co. That's where I want you to go. Get their special offer for the holidays. Going on right now. Visit Hawthorne.co. Hawthorne.co. And check out their special holiday offers. You'll love it. I loved it. You'll love it. Shall we do some clips? You want clips?
This movie has, I was thinking about this while watching it. Great clips. Can't wait to hear what you captured, but minus the visuals, I just can't imagine that they are going to make as much sense.
Probably not. It'd
be really interesting to see what happens with this. Yeah.
I agree. Or hear what happens. I think it's actually going to be better because some of those clips or some of the visuals, let me put it this way. The clips without context are real weird, real goofy. So, let's find out how that goes with this one, the old man explaining what he's not doing.
She's not my secretary. She's what they call an executive liaison. Ah. And I'm not banging her, if that's what you're implying.
Oh, I jumped right to it. Got right to it.
I just realized this guy knows all along what's going on. Why is he so weird here? He knows what's going on.
He knows about the door. He knows about...
Yeah.
I think he's playing weird. He's like Yoda at first, where it's like, my home this is. And he's just being an idiot and eating his food and everything. And then eventually looks in the sky and tells ghosts.
I always find it curious to me is like, what happens to your mind once you've lived several lifetimes? I mean, what happens? I mean, because he's supposed to be how old? Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know. Old.
No, we don't know. Older old. Than 90.
Supposed to be old.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, it's like once you get to a certain point, I mean, I can barely understand kids today who are just, you know, 20 years younger than me. How do you deal with that when you're like 120 years?
You know, yeah. you also know when you're watching What We Do in the Shadows, the TV series, when you're in that office and you expect Colin Robinson to come around the corner anytime and bore you.
Making that face.
He's so
energy vampire face.
I'm finally getting that show done, and my gosh, that show is good.
It lived up to the promise set by the movie.
100%. It shouldn't have been.
It exceeds it.
FX has done this twice now. They took Fargo and they took What We Do in the Shadows, and they somehow made it work. I don't know how they pulled it off, but man.
It totally exceeds it, and it's all Matt Berry for me. Like
Matt Berry's so great,
the greatest thing ever.
His freaking vagina garden. He's so funny.
it's a topiary, Scott.
Yeah, sorry, vagina topiary. Excuse me. But also, just all of them. Like Nandor is such a surprise for me. The what's her name? Nadja is a revelation. She is so good.
Uh-huh.
Gosh dang it. Guillermo is an amazing familiar. I just love everyone. I want them all to be on forever, and they better make more seasons. All right.
Thanks to what we do in the shadows, I have this long-term project I'm working on where I'm finding artists who do different kinds of you know, art, like painting, photography, this kind of thing. And I am determined to have like family photos that look like they go back hundreds of years.
Oh, that's great.
Like I'm absolutely determined that I'm going to have this on my walls in my later years.
You'll hear the song, you're dead, you're dead. You'll be hearing that while you're laying there.
Right.
Yep. I didn't know that song was so old, by the way, like the 60s.
God, it's a really old folk song, yeah.
I had no idea. All right, here's this is 22 seconds, so it's a little long, but I just feel like you got to play it. So here it is.
Carol Tavisher Susie Maxine?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
That may have been a little longer than I was comfortable with.
I know.
Which but he got it. It's amazing. Yeah. How did he do that?
Yeah. It's crazy.
Things that grossed out Scott.
Yeah. No kidding. Here's a sound.
Aww.
Oh, that's just her saying.
Aww.
I don't know why.
Well, because she has just like rebuffed him bad. Oh, man. Oh, yeah, that was really a heartbreaker.
Did. Yeah. She really nailed him down. Also, it sucks that elevator is just going to have an alarm every time anyone needs to use it because it has to stop at this fake floor.
Yeah.
What a bummer that is. Just from a practical day-to-day work problem, I don't want to hear that thing ringing every day.
Noise, exactly. You're only going to hear that noise on the 7.5 floor, too, and it's going to happen all the damn time.
This is a sound file to go with my gross-out moment, at least one of them. Here it is. All right, now I'd like you to hear that last part. That last part one more time. Yeah, that's a real winner. Oh, boy. Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
That is not the dry toast swallow. That's a swallow they did with eggnog or something later on.
Yeah, that's like the Sarlacc pit. It's real bad. Okay, who the F is John Malkovich?
Who the F is John Malkovich?
I love that she was both the smartest woman on the planet and the dumbest at the same time. Yeah. Let's see. This was real close to the saying the title, so I captured it.
I was inside John Malkovich looking out.
Okay, it was inside Malkovich. Okay, not quite the same.
Oh, that's right. They never actually say being John Malkovich in the movie, do they?
No. I tried to find it, and they almost did it again here with this.
You can be John Malkovich.
See? Almost.
Oh, that's the closest.
You can be him.
Yeah.
But then Cameron Diaz said this.
Oh.
And then she goes on to say,
"It's like he has a vagina."
Yeah, it's like he has a vagina. There you go. Vagina. I love an overpronunciated vagina, don't you?
Vagina.
Mm-hmm.
Vagina. All right, here's a quiet Malkovich yeah.
Yeah.
All right, which reminds me a lot of a quiet Ibit yeah.
Yeah.
Which I have right there. Anyway, yeah. I really like that. Let's see. Where were we? Lost my place.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Okay. Something about nipples.
My nipples are at attention, General Malkovich, sir.
Oh, wow. All right.
Good. Something about nipples.
Yeah, something about nipples. Some Eskimo trivia.
Did you know that Eskimos have not one, but 49 words for snow?
And where was she trying to pull that from?
Cameron Diaz pulls that, like, does that line perfectly to make it seem like I am just the smartest, I have the best trivia in the world that nobody's right, ever right. heard.
Right. She's given herself all this space and time between words.
Exactly.
And,
did you know?
Yeah. All right. Here's, oh, wow. This is just in. I'm sorry. I got to insert this file in here. This is from, says here on the envelope, from Brian Ibbett's mom. This is another prom clip. Now, this isn't you, though, Brian. This is your date said this.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so this is your date.
Sure.
At the end, and it goes like this.
Only as John, sweetie. Sorry.
Only as John, sweetie.
Only as John. Oh.
What were you doing? That was weird. What a weird thing.
Oh, yeah, I was, it was on Halloween, Halloween, really close to homecoming, not prom. Oh. And she only liked me when I dressed up as Founding Father John Adams.
Oh,
And I didn't have my costume with me, unfortunately.
Oh, all right.
No, I don't like being called.
Homecoming and not Halloween.
You know, you got to celebrate the second president of these States United. I get it.
I think you, Brian Ibbett, could be George Washington. I think you could pull that off.
I think you could pull that off. You could, dude. White wig.
Yeah, I think I could pull off Taft, and that's about it.
Right? Yeah, Taft. That's terrible. Oh, my gosh.
I don't think you'd look
it's like
that.
It's so, you know, such in demand right now, too.
I think you could do
that Taft so hot right now.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's being Taft. We saw more kids as Taft this year than we ever expected.
Yeah.
All right. Here's Malkovich saying sure.
Sure.
That's a weird way to say it, isn't
sure,
it?
Sure. Sure. Sure.
Isn't that weird? It's sure. weird.
Sure. All right. Saying- yes. Yes, Scott. It's weird. Here's- Please stop.
Please never play that again. All right. Here's an angry acting sequence with a chimp chaser.
John and me.
Don't forget about me.
Will you have the Maxine action figure to play with?
Oh snap! Mom and dad are fighting again.
Are always fighting. All right, here's John Malkovich sound. I will never forget. All right, pretty good. Here he is saying his name over and over.
Malkovich. 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 Malkovich?
Yeah, and then we get...
Malkovich!
Yeah.
Please, please tell me I'm not the only one who was going, Pika? Pika? Pikachu?
Malkovich!
Whoops. Sorry, I clicked that out of laughter. I did not mean to click it twice. Here he is going off again. All right, and another odd sound. All right. Here's an old lady in the background you may have missed.
I've always wondered what it would be like to have a penis.
All right, that was good. Don't remember the context. She was one of the body people, or you know, the
yeah.
whatever, and she was stoked about having a wiener.
I just want to answer that question. You know, it's pretty good. Like it's a little troublesome at times. Specific parts.
It's a lot
wardrobe.
To keep up with,
But yeah, it's pretty good. Like it's not a bad thing to have.
The ladies have more maintenance than we do. You know, they got to worry about a lot more stuff than we do. So I'm not saying a wiener is bad. I'm saying. It's slightly less. It's slightly more convenient than a vagine.
Convenient
than a vagine, but the vagine. Well, I just like looking at it more.
That's when we all went off the rails.
What grossed out Brian the most?
Yeah,
well,
right.
I don't know why that went there. All right, here's some chicken soup.
Chicken soup. Chicken soup.
Do you guys remember, you know that actor?
Chicken soup.
Was acting about chicken soup. You know him.
Chicken soup.
He's
I'm trying to remember when that happened in the movie.
I wrote it down too.
Chicken soup.
So he's trying to offer them food to try to, because he's going to get some for himself. It's just in the little meeting between the three of them, between
him and his
wife and Maxine.
I'm just trying to find, is it Larry the Agent? That's who it is. He is played by Carlos Jacot. He is also in Gross Point Blank, so another John
Cusack connection.
Cusack connection, yeah. He's in, let's see. Oh my gosh, where's the one where he's a total douche? Oh, he was in Big Love. He was good in that. Terminator, oh, yeah. Sarah Connor Chronicles. He was in that. He's in all sorts of stuff. This dude's everywhere. You know his face. But he was barely in this, like just for a hot freaking second. Oh, he was in Firefly. He played... Shit.
He played shit.
That's interesting.
Fire.
How do you do that? Do you,
Dunaway, would you quit putting Bat President Taft pictures in our Discord?
I'm giving you Halloween ideas for next year.
Yeah. He's trying to prepare you. Oh, that bath one is real rough.
I never knew that President Taft got stuck in a tub, or at least was a thing that happened. So if you don't go as Taft in a tub next year, I can't respect you.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, this dude's in a million things, and he's a kind of a bastard in all of them. So good job.
A couple episodes of Seinfeld, one as pool guy, and one as Ramon.
Oh, Ramon! He's one of the guys that says you will wear the ribbon, right? Isn't that guy?
I'm looking. So Janitor.
But that's him with chicken soup.
Chicken soup. Chicken soup.
That's the guy.
Chicken soup. Chicken soup.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Is it okay?
I think it is.
Yep. That's funny because I would like to now share with you a Seinfeld connection that I found. We mentioned him. Richard Fancy did the, I'll play a little bit of it.
John Malkovich, the artist, and Maxine, the entrepreneur, they make this character, this protean figure that we call John Malkovich.
Okay, that is Mr. Lippman.
Yeah, Mr. Lippman. So there's our Seinfeld connection.
And then Kathleen Keener was in an episode of Seinfeld as well. So there's that. There's also a Con Air connection, which is obvious. Malkovich and Cusack together at last again.
Yeah.
Although they weren't sharing a lot of scenes in that movie, but there you have it. All right, a couple more. Here's a laugh that I liked. It's Catherine Keener laughing. Just keeps building up.
That was pretty good.
Yep.
I like that.
She's an addicting human being.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what did you say there?
She's just
what was almost that Freudian slip there? What'd you say?
I don't know. She's into... I'm not going to try. All right, here's a... he wants a younger body.
Why couldn't I have found the portal to a younger body?
Yeah. You know, 46-year-old Malkovich, not everyone's favorite body. All right, one more weird Malkovich sound.
Woo!
All right, that's the end of that. Well done, everybody. Randy, in a minute, we're going to get to some Star Trek connections, so you hold on to those, because those are still coming up. But before that... It's the Film Sack Checklist. Never really explain your low ceilings. Check. Catherine Keener is adorable and rude at the same time. Check. I don't want to see John Malkovich do it ever again. Check. Brian put another Taft image in the thing.
Oh, jeez. That probably came from that children's book.
It did.
That's an amazing art. That's an amazing illustration, though.
It really is, yeah. Yeah. You just know that the sound that comes with that picture is...
Oh man!
So I guess we just left a little mind picture for all of our listeners.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah, I'm sad that they can't see what we're saying.
Theater of the mind.
It's even better if they can't.
Okay.
All right, Randy, you have some Star Trek connections for us today.
All right. So we mentioned Richard Fancy. His character in this movie was Johnson Hayward for some reason. Mm. He was also in the Voyager episode Tattoo, as well as the Next Generation episode The First Duty. He played Captain Satelk. I don't know why. But anyway, Patty Tippo was in this movie as John Malkovich's mom. Just one of those sort of like flashback around. So quick shots, and Patty Tippo also played Nurse Temple in the Next Generation episode Transfigurations. That was a memorable one. Yep. And then Willie Garson was in this as one of the people in the restaurant.
He's the guy who comes up and asks.
The R word guy. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That is the. You know, you hear the derogatory term for homosexuals once. It's that R word that it's like, oh, that's so hard to hear.
Yeah.
Willie Garson is such an underrated character actor. And he was Rika in the Voyager episode 30 Days.
Oh, interesting. He's an interesting dude. You see him come on things and you're just like, all right, we're in front. Dude, Ibbot, did you see the latest photo of Taft?
Yes, yes. No, that's not Taft. That's Jabba the Hutt with a Taft mustache. Yeah, come on now.
It's a Taft mustache on it's Jabba amazing the Hutt.
Did you just Photoshop that yourself, Brian?
I did not, but it was amazing that if you put a Taft mustache on Jabba the Hutt, how amazingly close it looks to Taft.
You should put that in the bathtub. It's great.
No, what better week than election week to be having Taft conversations? I love this. This is really great. All right. Well done. Those were all things. Let's move on to the soundtrack grade. I'd give it a W for weird and kind of not really there. It was like, nah, whatever. It wasn't anything big. But more importantly, we have the Twitter post to do. This is where you guys sum this thing up in 280 characters or less. And we start with Randy.
Please forgive me. Being John Malkovich. Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen.
Now, if this had been Charlie Sheen, I don't know if we would have had it for Film Sack. Not because we hate Charlie Sheen, but because I think that would be a terrible idea.
It would be a terrible movie.
Yeah, not a good movie. Even then, before we knew what a psycho he was, we're gonna get emails going.
I'm telling you, you watch this movie for him. Like he makes the movie for some. Like I don't think it's as good if you don't have Charlie Sheen drop in two or three times. And just be baffled by what's going on.
It was just enough. It was just enough, yeah. Any more than what we got, I think I would have been annoyed. All right, let's now do Dunaway.
Being John Malkovich. The puppeteer told me he loved me today. I can't think of anything more pathetic. Oh, hey, Charlie Sheen.
Oh, yeah, now you can. Now you can.
Wow.
Brian Ibbot.
Deep cut.
This is uncanny. Being John Malkovich, a movie that builds an entire story around one suspend your disbelief premise that John Malkovich and Charlie Sheen would be friends.
So the takeaway this week
is Charlie Sheen. It's hilarious. Charlie Sheen. Yeah.
What a weird thing. All right. Well, that brings us to the following content. Oh, yeah. Just hand it to me. This card. These are alternate titles, and it was almost called Being Long Malkovich. I don't know why I wrote that.
Being long, John.
Being long.
I don't know why I did that, except
it was a long movie. It was longer than it needed to be.
Maybe that was it. Or Give Him His Manny was the other title.
That's real good.
Yeah, that was the other one. Hey, emails. We got one from Chris Rogers. Sent this in. I got a couple of them today. These came to filmsack@gmail.com. He says, for the love of God, you need to do the movie Rad.
Did we not do Rad?
It is the quintessential classic from the 80s. It's terrible and uplifting at the same time. He says, terrible acting, but super crescendo at the finish. Makes a fat old man happy, please. I have been following you since Kroll. You've kept me, you've helped me survive on overseas stints in Taiwan and with awesome, insightful reviews. Thank you for the last decade, Chris. Chris, I see no reason we couldn't do Rad.
I would love to see Rad and see a free Lori Loughlin.
Whoa.
I mean, listen, Rad is the gleaming the cube of BMX movies.
True story.
I always thought of it as the other way around. Gleaming the cube is the Rad.
It's really interchangeable. It's
yeah. It's directed by Hal Needham. Came out in 1986, and I don't see it streaming, unfortunately. That may be something I have to just hunt down.
Oh, that's not rad.
That's not rad at all.
Yeah. That's less rad.
It's actually bad.
Yeah. Rad, bad.
Well, features Adrian Tellia Shire in the movie as well.
Good Lord. Well, that's fantastic.
And Ray Walston.
Oh, wow. Really? Yep. Oh, yeah. I like Ray Walston.
Yeah.
What was he doing? My favorite Marshall.
HB I Haggerty. Like Lori Loughlin. I'm glad Lori Loughlin's in that movie.
She's in prison.
Isn't she? Okay.
Isn't she in jail? She's good.
And you know, we talk about the best IMDb photo, but
is she
really
get out or is she supposed to be
Lori Loughlin's Lori Loughlin's Wikipedia photo is even better.
Yeah,
right.
We'll scrub some of the Taft from our
the Taft eyes
from our Discord with a photo of Lori Loughlin's photo on Wikipedia.
Well, Lori Loughlin
I think that is a computer generated render of Lori Loughlin.
She's still in jail, by the way. She's in there now.
Really, right now?
Until Christmas, right? That was the just in time for Christmas.
Just before Christmas, she gets let out, and she does get let out early for good behavior or whatever. But that's happening then.
It's 2020.
It's a Hallmark movie, by the way. Before Christmas, she lets out. She gets let out.
Oh, they should do it.
Great.
That's what she does now anyway. They should totally do this. Ibbit. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, man.
That's a brilliant
idea. I'll be home in time for Christmas.
Home from jail for Christmas.
Hallmark Christmas movie stars is in jail. Make a jail Christmas movie.
What would you call this? What would you? We need a name. Let's do a name.
Mom will be home for Christmas.
Christmas in Stripes.
Stripes. It's even better.
Paroled in time for Christmas.
Right. There you go.
Orange is the new Christmas. Yeah. It's gonna be something good.
The Christmas Warden Christmas. Prince.
There you go. Perfect. No, that's it. That's good because that's more in keeping with the bullshit names I give their
movies. Yes, exactly. Yes.
All right. Well, good luck to them and her. The second thing here, and we'll write Rad down, Chris. Next email is from listener Brendan.
We won't know what it means, but we'll write it down.
Yeah, we'll just write down Rad.
I just did three letters. Got it.
Dear Sackers, says Brendan. I finally went back and listened to episode number one of Film Sack, like you always suggest, and it was actually good. In fact, I kept asking myself, how is this first episode so well put together? Seriously, even Randy nailed his first after credits line when he compared the sharing of fire in Kroll's marriage scene to the sharing of venereal disease between couples. Mm. What a way to add lore. But I have to ask, what were you all thinking calling Brian Ibbit Ibby? Bibby.
Yeah. Bibby.
Thanks and keep it up, Brendan.
Ibby would have been better than Bibby.
Yeah, Ibby would have maybe been better. Yeah.
To answer the first question, even in 2010, when we started doing Film Sack, we had all been doing this for a while. Like we kind of had
we had
our experience down already.
Yeah.
That
it was 09, but you're close.
I can't get over how many nicknames Brian Ibbit has had over the years.
Well, no, the reason we did it at all was because there's two Brians. We wanted to keep them separate. And Ibbit's like, well, some people call me Bibby, so.
Is there two Brians?
Oh, no.
Have you ever seen me and Brian Dunaway in the same place at the same time?
Yes,
I literally
actually,
have a picture of the two of you together.
I have photos
in the same
many
place.
Photos.
Right in front of me. It's on the wall. Right
I have a lot of pictures of you guys next to
but
each other.
But do you?
No, but did you? Yeah, so that's why that was there. And we quickly lost it because we can just say Ibit or, you know.
Yeah.
It's
not and it was pretty obvious because sometimes, you know, if there is a... Brian Dunaway, is this the first time you've seen this movie? Yeah. You just preface it. It's easy.
Yeah. No big deal.
And, easy.
And this, the 10 years we've been doing this has been one performance piece for me. I am trying really hard to reach a level where I can say the name Brian and everyone present knows which one I'm talking about.
Yeah, it happens. True story.
Yeah, that's totally true. So yeah, that's your, just to answer your question, yes. And also it's good to hear that episode one holds up and we do recommend it. Like there's no reason why you can't go back and listen to the old ones.
Sure.
Like what you're getting today, it's a lot like what you used to get. So if you're like, man, I'm sure there's this is more, dude, we got 10 years of this shit. Go listen.
When was the first one we did intros? I mean, I know we used to discuss, but
I thought we started with them, didn't we?
God, I thought we did as well. Did we not?
I don't think we started
right from the beginning.
You know what? Let's find out. Hold on one second.
We did.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to do it right now. We're going to do it. Old shows back up. Here we go.
I think the greeting is like the I think it goes back to the first episode.
Here's episode one of Krull. Oh, I have to make it so you guys can hear it. Hold on a second. There we go. All right, here we go. Check this out. See, we go right into that. Okay. I forgot I had a different intro. Slightly different.
You'll pay for the whole seat, but you'll only need the edge. This is Film Sack.
Oh, that was like a can one we did earlier.
Okay. Yeah.
I wasn't sure what we were going to do there. Okay, so hurry up, Sank, hurry up.
Oh, sure.
We've been doing that since the beginning. Okay, now this has changed. Right, here we go. Welcome to Film Sack, the podcast dedicated to mining the dark depths of Netflix streaming for all the betterment of mankind. This is episode one, people. The first one ever. I am Scott Johnson. Joining me tonight is Brian Dunaway.
Hi. How you doing?
I didn't do intros.
Good.
Randy Jordan.
I am a legendary five-pronged weapon flying through space.
Awesome. And Brian Ibbett. Hitherto known, be known to forever in the future as Bibby.
Oh,
I just want to get that out front and out of the way. Welcome, Bibby.
Or you could just call me the one-eyed man.
Oh, wow.
Dude, everyone sounds
younger.
Oh, see,
we were doing intros.
Yeah.
Well, there were like little bits.
And yeah, they evolved.
I look back at my notes for FilmSec that I keep in OneNote, Microsoft OneNote.
Yeah.
And I go back to like Resident Evil. And my intro is new from Mattel. The Red Queen fluorescent light tubes defense hallway playset with laser cutting action comes with Umbrella Strike Team. Some assembly required. That is it for my intro. It is like one set.
They have grown.
Yeah, they have grown.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
And you know what else has grown? Scott Johnson, apparently 10 years ago, sounded 30 years younger.
Right. I don't understand. Voice. My voice has definitely gotten lower. And I, you know, whatever. I guess age does that. But I way prefer where I'm at now. I hate my younger sounding voice.
Everybody, welcome to the Film Sack. This is Scott Johnson.
But it's amazing that only, you know, 10 years can do that. That's just weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was us. And if you want to hear that episode, you should. And that was a lively sounding thing. I think I might go back and hear our episode one. All right. Speaking of shows and reasons why you should go listen to old ones, there isn't one next week. We're off next week. I'm on a bit of a trip and will not be here. And as a result, we're not doing one. So we're doing a bye next week. That'll happen as it rarely does next week. But we'll be back the following week with the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Mm.
Yes. The final Sean Connery film before he retired. And now he's died. So we can talk about all that when we get there. You lose your car keys, all those references, they're all coming up on our next episode of Film Sack. Again, one extra week away, okay? No show next week. Some people always miss this, so I'm just making it clear. No show next week. The weekend after that, though, we'll be back with the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which Brian Ibbett almost walked out of in theaters, so I'm sure he's looking forward to a second watching. I never saw it, so I have no idea what to expect.
I love that he almost walked out. Usually you don't talk about the ones you almost walked out of.
I thought about
the ones you did. Yeah, it's like, I'm leaving. No, I'm staying. It's a little bit longer.
That's kind of it.
What was that thing, like 2004? What was it? Do we know when that came out?
Might have been before 04, wasn't it?
It was 2003.
I'm sorry. 99, it says here.
Oh.
That can't be right. Hold on.
No. The book or the comic came out in 99. The movie came out in 1993.
You're right.
Diesel punk superhero film is the way it's described.
Wait a minute.
Right. And it's important that you not watch the TV show The League to prepare for this. You need to watch the movie League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
I'd much rather watch that.
2003. Sean Connery, Stuart Townsend, Peta Wilson, written by Alan Moore, although he denies he has anything to do with this. And directed by Stephen Nottingham, Norrington, sorry.
Norrington, yeah, Stephen Norrington.
Yeah.
Also directed Blade. Oh, not directed, sorry. Was the makeup person for Blade.
Oh. But
that was the lead into him becoming a director.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool. But he's only done... Oh, he directed Blade as well. It says right here, director, Death Machine, Blade, The Last Minute, and League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and nothing since. Yeah.
Yep.
So Blade 1's pretty cool. That's a cool movie.
You can't be both makeup and director.
It says he is.
That doesn't happen.
It says he is.
Hold on a second. Spike Jonze could be both director and guy who moves the camera.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
Gosh dang it, Blade's good. We've never seen Blade 1 here. I've seen it a million times on my own, but we should watch Blade.
A million times.
Love Blade. Love
Blade 3.
Blade 3 is okay. Blade 2 is pretty good. 1 is amazing.
Yeah.
They needed a new Blade shit. Let's get that going. Mm-hmm. Oh, and also Wesley Snipes playing half vampire in an episode of What We Do in the Shadows was amazing. I love that. Where he called in by Skype. That's an amazing episode. Anyway, that's going to do it for today. So again, no show next week, but the week after that, we'll be back. Filmsack.com is our website. You know it. You love it. Go over there. That's where you find that old, all the old shows too. By the way, there's an old RSS feed that goes all the way back to number one, 10 years ago. So go check it out. That's filmsack.com. Leave us some emails, filmsack@gmail.com. You can always find us on Twitter @filmsack. And if you leave us a review wherever you collect your podcasts, that helps us get noticed and pushes us up in the ranks so people can find us. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian. And for Randy.
Machine Malkatraz!
We'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.